Welcome to Longevity. I'm your host, Natalie Nittam. I'm a nutritionist, a human potential and epigenetic coach, and I created this podcast to bring you the latest ways to take control of your health and longevity. We cover it all, from new technology and ancestral health practices to personalized interventions and a very special interest of mine, peptides and bioregulators. Enjoy the show. Welcome back to the show, everybody. As always, a groundbreaking episode for you guys today, and we're getting into advanced metabolomic testing, biological age testing, getting real insight into what's happening in your body at a cellular level, looking at different systems. This is a really, really cool episode in and insight into the kinds of testing that is now starting to become available to you to understand what's happening in your body and what's coming down the pipes so that you can take action sooner than later and ensure that longevity path is guaranteed. Before we jump into the episode, of course, we need to thank our sponsors. And before I do that, I need to thank you for being here. Thanks to you guys, I get to do what I love every single day. And we've blown through 1 million downloads. We're ranked in the top 5 in nutrition, in the top 25 in health and fitness. This podcast has really, really taken off. And it's really thanks to you, the audience. So thank you. And I'd like to invite those of you who haven't already done so to sign up for my newsletter. Go to natnittam.com. There's a red bar at the top. And that website is really where you can find out a lot about me, what I do, all of the different things I'm involved in, and how, if you're interested, you might be able to join my membership community, which is now off of Facebook and on a different platform that offers us privacy for our conversations. So that's natnittam.com. And again, thank you for being here. Now, let's start by thanking our sponsors. Let's start by thanking our first sponsor. If you're looking for a skincare solution that truly delivers results, I want to tell you about the revolutionary benefits of Vitali Skincare. I'm sure you've heard me talk about it before, and if you're a peptide enthusiast, then you've heard me talk about this peptide, GHKCU. This is a regenerative skincare line that is really centered on the power of that copper peptide with an unparalleled purity of over 99%. Their formulas combine GHKCU with other incredible active, natural, and organic ingredients to provide your skin with the essential elements it needs to stay vibrant and healthy, regardless of your age. GHKCU has been extensively studied and proven to improve wound healing, stimulate the production of collagen, elastin, and glycosaminoglycans. It even helps to promote hair growth on your head, repair DNA and damaged fibroblasts, and those are the cells in your skin that produce collagen. It helps to enhance antioxidant defense as well as reduce inflammation. I mean, talk about a list of benefits, right? So by consistently using Vitali products, you're not only improving the appearance of your skin, but you're also protecting and enhancing the health of your body's largest organ. Vitali Skin Cell Restorative Serum is available in both medical grade 3% GHKCU as well as a 2% GHKCU formula, making it one of the most potent products on the market. And that serum, both those serums are enhanced with giant sea kelp, brown algae, which is rich in minerals, and also helps combat the effects of free radicals while protecting your skin's collagen from degradation. It also includes squalene oil, which is 100% organic, and it enhances your skin's water retention and protects the moisture barrier, providing elasticity and resilience. So as you can see, it's a winning combination. So last point on Vitali's products, they are free of parabens, phthalates, fragrances, and artificial colors, ensuring a pure and effective skincare experience. Now, if you want to start incorporating copper peptides into your skincare routine, and you want to check out Vitali Skincare, you can use code NAT20 at VitaliSkincare.com. All right, let's talk about this episode. Have you ever wondered, and I'm sure many of you have because you're here to talk about longevity, if there's a way to gain deep insights into your body's unique needs and optimize your health? And the answer may lie in the cutting-edge field of metabolomics. In today's episode of the Longevity Podcast, Dr. Paniz Jazbi, the co-founder of Theriome, and I discuss how their groundbreaking Aristotle test is revolutionizing the way we approach health and wellness. From assessing mitochondrial function and nutritional status to identifying potential disease risk, and most importantly, guiding personalized interventions, the Aristotle test is a total game changer for precision medicine. Overall, we discuss this test's ability to offer valuable insights for dealing with complex health issues, recovering from illness, or even if it's just about optimizing your athletic performance. Dr. Paniz Jazbi founded Therium in 2022 with a simple mission: deliver unparalleled health information to customers through deep phenotyping, integrating the theory of omics sciences. Therium seeks to innovate personalized wellness by analyzing the totality of systems biology, from the genome to the metabolome and everything in between. It is a very impressive test, you guys. So if you want to get deep insights into your health for yourself, you can go to therio.me. So that's therio.me, and use code NAT to save 10% off the cost of whichever test you decide you want to dive into. All right, one more sponsor before we dive in. So we all know that staring at screens all day, eating junk food, being deprived of natural sunlight, as well as dealing with chronic stress are ultimately the enemies of our longevity. And they are an increasing part of our daily lives, whether we like it or not. So while the enemies are on the rise, the good news is we're not helpless against them. And as you know, I've tried a lot of things once, but it's the things that I keep doing and plan to do forever, the things that are simple, powerful, and really work that I like to bring to you. Every day, I do one simple thing which helps me fight a whole bunch of the enemies of longevity. I take Timeline Nutrition, and here's why. Longevity takes cellular energy, and cellular energy comes from your mitochondria. You know that there are these little energy factories that take in nutrients, carbs, fats, and proteins and churn out the life force that keeps you going strong today and for life, called ATP. So recent research has shown that when your mitochondria are strong, they're not only generating energy, but they're also acting to protect your DNA. DNA damage is one of the key hallmarks of aging. Now, Timeline Nutrition has cracked the code when it comes to optimizing those mitochondria. They were founded and led by doctors and scientists, and they are supported by 15 years of research, 11 clinical studies, and 58 patents. Timeline's MitoPure is among the most deeply studied healthy aging compounds. MitoPure is the first and only nutrient clinically shown to support mitochondrial health by triggering the body's natural process of mitochondrial rejuvenation. And that active ingredient is called urolithin A. And it keeps your mitochondria running like well-oiled machines to make sure you're ready to fight the enemies of longevity today and every day. So to get your hands on your own, you will want to go to timelinenutrition.com and use code NAT10 to save 10% off your order. And now, let's jump into that episode.
Hey folks, just a quick reminder that all of the information presented in this podcast is for information purposes only. No medical advice, no diagnosing, no treatments suggested here. Before you try anything that you hear about or learn about here, make sure that you check with your medical provider.
Dr. Paniz Jazbi, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you here today.
It's a pleasure to be here, Natalie. Thank you for having me.
Well, you know, I'm looking forward to this conversation because, as I was just saying to you, I finally have a firm grasp on this whole metabolomics, omics kind of game because I've been kind of plowing through your handbook this afternoon. And I'm like, oh, that's why they call it that. Right. Okay. I'm on it. So we're gonna delve into basically in this podcast. So guys, take out your pens and papers. We're going to get a little technical. We're going to try to keep it above the line kind of thing, but I feel like we're going to talk about human health and the body in the way that we need to be talking about it really as an integrated whole. But I want to start with, the company name Therium, really interesting. And I just wanted to start with, so full transparencies, you guys, before we started, I said, so has anybody ever mentioned that Therium sounds a lot like this other company that kind of met a somewhat fateful end? And so Dr. Jazbi was kind enough to laugh and say, actually, this is what happened. So I'm just love it if you kind of tell us a little bit about how you came to this name, which is a good name. Don't get me wrong. I think it's a great name.
We do too. And we came across it through various iterations at the beginning. As I mentioned in our discussion before we started recording, that we initially wanted to call the company Prometheus, after the namesake of the Greek Titan in mythology who stole fire from the gods of Olympus and brought it to the common man. And of course, that fire in the myths represents technology or the awareness of technology, use of technology. And that is what Theriome, which we ended up naming ourselves, really stands for, is that we are bringing these advanced technologies, platforms, and analyses that are, you know, the basically the only used by research institutions for studies, and we're turning the power toward the consumer. And so bringing that technology to them was very akin to Prometheus stealing the fire. And however, when we did a quick look into the space, we saw that there were numerous biotech companies with that name already, and they were using, you know, very narrow applications. And so even I don't think the name Prometheus was quite befitting, but we didn't want to step on any toes. And we went through various other names that we could go with and eventually landed on Theriome, you know, given our focus on systems biology and the fact that omic sciences, or the genome, metabolome, proteome, et cetera, these sciences are all theory. And as we collect more data and learn more data and analyze that data with ever-increasing sophistication, our theories about the central dogma of biology and an individual's cellular physiology will change. And so that dynamicism and the aspect that this landscape of knowledge is ever-evolving, the topography is ever-changing, that's a theory. And so we are the theory of omic sciences, or Theriome. And currently we specialize in metabolomic testing.
Yeah, no, and I love that, right? That whole, the embracing of the fluidity of what we know, what we're learning, and how what we think we know is going to potentially change.
Absolutely, down that's the a road. Guarantee, yeah. So and, I know there's some brand recognition with Theranos, and that is it's always been a good conversation starter, obviously, just with us. And so, and it also lends to some brand recognition. And I think as long as we can dispel any associations or you know, allegations of fraud and be transparent with what we do, so far we've had no problems with the name.
Amazing. Okay, good. So let's talk about the omics. Let's talk about all the, you know, and you know, at the end of the day, one of the questions I asked you before we started is this kind of test like a little bit like the what we're looking at when the closest test I can think of, which is not close at all, but the only other test I know of that really does even lends itself to this kind of theory is like a Dutch test that's looking at metabolites. It's not as concerned with absolute numbers of A, B, or C, but what it's looking for is what is the body doing? And from that data, kind of inferring back, looking at pathways, looking at DNA expression, like genetic expression, looking at different ways of understanding what is happening. And in a way, I think it's a much more dynamic view of an interpretation of what's happening to give you a better idea of, well, do we need to intervene and might we intervene? And from what I can see with Theriome, you're applying that, but in a much broader way to all the systems in the body.
Absolutely. So we are monitoring with our metabolomic test, trademarked the Aristotle test. We are monitoring 126 sentinel metabolites related to cellular physiology. What do I mean by sentinel metabolites? During our discussion before we started recording, Natalie, you mentioned the redundancy of biology. Mm-hmm. And what we are leveraging is that inherent redundancy in biology. Take, for example, a metabolite like malic acid. Malic acid is involved in various pathways. It's involved in the TCA cycle. It's involved in you know, the degradation of branched-chain amino acids. It is involved as a cofactor or substrate in numerous other reactions throughout the body. And by monitoring malic acid, we haven't just monitored the TCA cycle, but we have managed to monitor partially monitor those other pathways that this metabolite is involved in. Now, when we have 126 of these sentinel metabolites, we are able to monitor with very high sensitivity, at least using three metabolites or more per pathway, 68% of all known human canonical pathways. And what do I mean by canonical? Well, there are databases that scientists and researchers such as myself use to parse the very complicated biochemical circuitry of our cells into these silos. And they're siloed only for, you know, ease of understanding and conceptualization and referencing. But obviously, as I mentioned, metabolism is a integrated circuit. And so it's, you know, when you talk about, you know, palmitic acid, for instance, or malic acid or any of our other metabolites, these metabolites are present in usually a dozen or so pathways. And by monitoring 126 of them, we again get that 68% coverage of all known pathways. And depending on which database you're using, whether it's the KEG database or the Small Molecules and Pathways database, SMPDB, you are looking at anywhere from 99 to 108 pathways. Some databases disagree as to what is considered a discrete pathway and deserves to be canonized as a separate set. But roughly, if we're going to take the KEG database, which is still the gold standard, in my opinion, we are looking at 68% of all known pathways with at least three metabolites or more per pathway. And this is unprecedented access into the intricacies of an individual's metabolism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, this is really fascinating. So I'm trying to figure out how we unpack this from top down kind of thing. So maybe what we, because I want to ask you about spermidine, and then I want to ask you about mitochondrial function. But before we do that, I want to, like, I just want to maybe, because you're also leveraging, you're leveraging AI in this as well, right? Because you're, you know, I think what's happening is as we move forward in this world and you have access to greater and greater amounts of data, our ability to synthesize that data and make sense of it starts to get challenged for ourselves. And this is where maybe computer modeling or AI can start to crunch numbers and look for variations or commonalities in a different way than maybe the human brain can, or probably do it a whole lot faster than we can, kind of thing. So I'm just wondering, maybe what we'd start with is the different omics, right? Yeah. And quickly, not too long, because we don't want this to be like a science lecture, but just give people an idea of the different pieces of the puzzle that are playing into this whole metabolomics picture. Because, you know, I do want to get to the part where, you know, the case studies at the end of what you sent me were really fascinating. There was a cancer patient, there was a person with a heart patient. I think there's an athlete in there, or you at least talk about athletes. So the range of applications of this kind of data is really interesting. And what I think is really interesting is when we look at our lab work right now, we're like, okay, my blood work looks like this, and I have this much of this and this much of that and that much of that. It doesn't really tell me that much about why and what's happening, right? And so I have a billion questions on that front, but let's just start with a few definitions maybe and set the landscape so that then I can just like fire away.
Sure. Systems biology is a scientific discipline that is essentially built off of general systems theory, which is an engineering concept, but it is a very gestalt philosophy in that we believe that the whole is always more than the sum of its parts. And therefore we must understand an individual at a molecular level, using all of the analyzing all layers of the central dogma of biology, as we call it. And what is that central dogma? It's that you have DNA that is transcribed to RNA, which is then translated to proteins, which then interact with other proteins, your microbiota, to produce metabolites. And every layer of this very complex biochemical interaction has its own discipline, has its own omics. So we talk about genomics being the total set of DNA in our cells, transcriptomics being all the RNA that is present within our system at a given time. You have the proteomics, which is all the proteins of the body, all the complements, isoforms, post-translational modifications. And then what we have is the microbiome, complete set of bacteria, fungi, archaea, even parasites that are living on us and in us. And then we have the metabolome. So the metabolome is the complex end result of all of the processes taking place upstream of it. Metabolomics sits obviously downstream of genomics, but it sits also upstream of the environment. And when we view metabolomics in this way, we see that it is the product of gene-environment interactions necessarily. Mm-hmm. And when we consider that most of the conditions that are the greatest contributors to human morbidity and mortality are not genomic or genetic conditions at all, but rather are the result of that complex interplay between the gene and a person's environment, then we start to realize how uniquely positioned the metabolome is to give us health insights, both about what's going on in the body and help us get data on how we can re-engineer an individual's trajectory. So you mentioned, you know, AI. Obviously, we have to use AI. With our panel of 126 metabolites, we construct more than 15,000 models in the analysis of each customer's report. Wow. And that sort of modeling cannot take place with a human brain. You cannot assume a human brain to do that. And I know that we've, you know, I think colloquially, a lot of people associate AI with something like ChatGPT, which is a very powerful large language model. But there are, you know, different subsets of machine learning that are more statistical. That we utilize at Ethereum, such as random forests or support vector machines or very complex convolutional neural networks that we use for deep learning and longitudinal modeling. These are the techniques that we have perfected through our, you know, academic experience and training, have published on and patented on. And that is the set of tools that we turn to instead of saying, I want to run a study with 30 people in this group and 30 people in this group. What if we could run a study on just one person? And these are known as N of one studies. And that's what we offer at Ethereum with our Aristotle test, is an N of one study of a single individual.
Yeah, which is fascinating. I mean, this is taking personalized medicine really, truly to the next level. I think there's a lot of talk. There's been lots of talk towards personalized medicine. There's been, you know, I mean, everybody, I think not everybody, a lot of people in the space understand that it's coming down to the individual. Like it just does. Like your the things that you're exposed to, your history, your genetics, your how you react to different things, it's so individual and unique that but it's almost impossible for people to do practice personalized medicine, because to your point, like it's just really hard to take all of these different variables into account. And so now with this, you know, it makes sense that with some kind of machine learning assistance, you're now finally able to crunch these numbers and take it down to the one person without having some poor guy locked in an office for 3 months. And by the time he's finished crunching the numbers, it's changed.
It's not relevant. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Which would really suck. It would be a horrible job.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we did a back of the napkin calculation one day as how, you know, assuming a doctor spends 5 minutes creating one model, which is unfeasible. The human brain is not going to model one model in 5 minutes. But let's just say he's a very fantastic physician and mathematician, and he's modeling these metabolites. It would take him, you know, longer than 9 months to complete the analysis by hand if he didn't sleep, didn't eat, didn't drink, and just did that work. And so it's an incredibly computationally burdensome endeavor. But we have, and we don't do it, you know, with just our regular laptops. We have to connect to supercomputing nodes to perform our analysis, especially our digital twinning analysis, which takes 1,300 interventions that we've curated, ranging from medications to supplements to dietary and lifestyle adjustments, and then simulates the effects of those interventions 1,000 times each on an individual's metabolic profile to sort them from most efficacious, the ones predicted to be most efficacious, to the least efficacious. And we're able to tailor dosages and recommendations very precisely to that individual's needs. And that is computationally cumbersome and expensive.
Yeah, no kidding. And time, labor, grossly labor intense. Okay, so, and then you mentioned the microbiome a minute ago, and I think that the microbiome is kind of like a separate project even in your world, right? Like it's its own universe, and yet it is intrinsically, I mean, it's you cannot deny how integrated it is in with everything else. Frankly, it itself is responsible for a ton of metabolites just from the gut bugs, never mind your body. So is that your next iteration? Did I understand that properly? Or is that a graduation? Or are you already taking into account the microbiome now, but there's a new iteration coming down the pipes? I mean, we haven't even finished talking about the first one, but
yeah, no, this is great. This, however you want to steer this, I'm totally glad. And you're right about all of it. First of all, the microbiome is its own systems biology ecosystem. Each species in your gut has its own genome, its own transcriptome, its own proteome, and its own metabolome. And so we fit microbiome as a layer into the systems biology hierarchy for ease of understanding and conceptualization. But it is truly its own world. And I think as time goes on, we will start unraveling it. In the words of my co-founder, the microbiome currently is, for all intents and purposes, a black box. And we know that it's important. We know in some ways that it's important, but we're learning more every day. And we do have a test that we've already created have, you know, begun beta testing with a very small population. It's known as the Ilya test, named after the science, the Russian scientist who really created microbiome science. And this is the creation of my co-founder, Dr. Moore. And it is a very convenient to collect bunny wipe, and it lets us probe very deeply using shotgun metatranscriptomics, which is the most advanced sequencing technology for this purpose. We are able to monitor 600 bugs at the species level, far more than any other test on the market. And although our test isn't on the market, I guess. Mm-hmm. And we are able to look at various archaea, fungi, and even parasites, which as we've begun this sort of journey into serving people with their health needs, parasitic infections is one of the most common concerns that people tend to have. And so having a incredibly deep profiling method, a sequencing method that can discern signatures, genetic signatures of those parasites is of crucial importance to us. And yes, you're right. That is this internal bioreactor, as everyone calls it. And that's because 50% of your metabolites and proteins interact in some way with your intestinal microbiota, just your intestinal microbiota. Yeah. And that is a massive number when you consider you have, you know, 25,000 different metabolites and hundreds of thousands of proteins at any one time. And so this connectivity and the reactivity of the microbiome is of fundamental importance when understanding the overall health of the host. And so we are working on bringing this test to fruition, hopefully, very soon. We keep pushing it back because we're developing something very interesting in that we don't want to just put another microbiome test on the market. We want to put together the first multi-omics test that has ever been offered direct to consumer, which means that you will be able to take a dry blood spot to analyze your systemic metabolomic profile. In addition to that, you'll be able to take this dissolvable bunny wipe and have a very deep sequencing of your gut microbiota. And you can, again, analyze them in vacuum, but analyzing them both separately always will lead to less insights than analyzing them as an integrated whole. And this is beyond just simple correlational analysis and saying, well, this metabolite correlates strongly with this microbial species. And so we have some sort of idea there. But we are taking it to the point of, you know, using, for instance, co-occurrence analysis via analysis known as MMVEC, which is another machine learning tool we have. And MMVEC allows us to, for instance, do probability rankings of the co-occurrence of metabolites and their microbiota, and it gives us a very sensitive indication of what metabolites are interacting with exactly what species, how they're interacting, the rate of interaction, especially as we test through time, and then gives us a very targeted approach to modifying their metabolomic or intestinal compositions. And by offering both of these tests in tandem, and that's again why we're delaying this release.
No, it makes sense.
The next test is because we don't want to just tell you what's in your gut, which is what a standard microbiota test will do. We want to tell you what those are doing. It's not just composition, but function. And that's what the integration of the metabolome with the microbiome allows us to do.
Yeah. No, it's fascinating. And I, you know, it is, if there ever was a holy grail, it is, but you guys are going at something that, you know, I've always said the human body didn't come with a manual. And
no.
And so we're, since the beginning of time, trying to understand how the heck this machine works, this very complex, sophisticated, nuanced machine. it's all reverse engineering. And sometimes you think you got it right, you think you got it right, you think you got it right, and all of a sudden, oh crap, we got it wrong. And now you have to go all the way back down to the bottom again to start over again. And now you're, by adding this whole microbiome piece of the puzzle, which in and of itself, like you said, is essentially a black box. I can see that it's going to take some time. And again, also because it's so unique to each individual. Nobody's ever come out and said, this is the perfect microbiome. There may not be a perfect microbiome. There just might be a microbiome that works well for this person.
For you, exactly. And that's what the data has shown for the last, decade and a half, particularly. The research to find the perfect microbiome has largely led to a dead end. And that is because we know some species that can, in certain instances with lifestyle patterns, be considered pathogenic. And there are some microbiota that in some cases, in certain environments, can be considered beneficial. We do have, very well-characterized signatures of individuals from different cultures and continents and geography. So actually, the microbiome can be used to, predict or say with very high conclusiveness what region of the world roughly an individual is from, given what right. their intestinal microbiota show. But the metabolome is actually, relative to the microbiome, far more dynamic, far more variable, and far more unique to that individual.
Yeah, no, that's really fascinating. Okay, so I was looking through some of the you give a sample test in the book, and looking at some of the things that you look at. So I was thinking maybe we could talk about a couple of them in the context of what it is you're looking at, where you're finding it, and what it means. And one of the compounds that's gotten a lot of people's attention over the last little while is spermidine. And I was really fascinated to see it come up. I'm like, oh, this is interesting, right? Because you're looking at blood. Are you looking at spermidine levels in the blood plasma, or are you looking at it in the are you assessing levels of taurine and whatever else in the cell, in the red blood cell, or are you looking at it in I'm backing myself into a corner here.
No, you're not. That's a fantastic question, and one that I don't get asked enough, because it is a very important distinction. Our test, the aerosol test, is a metabolomics test that is derived from a dry blood spot that is collected point of care, direct to consumer, shipped back to our lab here in downtown Phoenix. And that is a whole blood analysis necessarily. And so we are looking at whole blood cells as well as the plasma, which is a constituent of the blood. And that gives us an incredibly comprehensive look at, chronic expression of spermidine in an individual's blood, which is probably the most important sample type to look at if you're doing metabolomics. We consider doing various other sample types in the beginning, maybe a hair follicle analysis or a central, CSF, but CSF requires a spinal tap or urine, but urine is an excretory profile. It doesn't show systemic expression of these very important metabolites. So blood is the ideal sample type for a metabolomics test. And in our test, we're using whole blood, which includes the red blood cells, which are lysed, proteins are precipitated. And with our very advanced sample processing steps, we're able to isolate an aqueous layer of metabolites. And that is what we inject into our mass spec for analysis.
Okay. So tell me about spermidine. Tell me what we're looking for here. Because spermidine's super interesting in that, depending on who you talk to, it addresses 9 or 12 of the different hallmarks of aging in various different ways. I saw one diagram that claims that spermidine hits all 12 of the currently accepted hallmarks of aging. And I'm sure there's a lot more coming down the pipe. So, why did you look at spermidine?
So all of our models. So as you've noticed, we profile 12 health domains, and these health domains are domains that we've gone into the literature and have mined data to train our AI models. Excuse me. And we want to make sure that we, in every domain, have included enough metabolites that can speak to that domain, given outcomes of the studies that our models are trained on, with at least 90% accuracy. But we also don't want to include too many metabolites per domain, because when a model is overloaded with variables, you run the risk of what's known as overfitting, or essentially that your model with its algorithmic weights associated with every metabolite and how importantly it views each one will necessarily be too overfit to sampling error that is inherent in your training data. And then as soon as you go and test a new case, so your test data, which are your customers, then the model falls apart, it doesn't perform well, and it's not generalizable because, again, it's too overfit to the nuances or the sampling error that's inherent in your training set. And our training set is 10,000 individuals. It's not a small set, but still there is a risk of overfitting. So you'll notice that we profile 126 metabolites. Every health domain contains some combination of those larger panel of 126. And in the aging domain and various other domains, spermidine is making an appearance. And that's because, of course, as you mentioned, it does speak largely to aging. And it accounts for a very appreciable proportion of variance. Or when we talk about statistical variance, we're talking about what percentage of outcomes are attributable to spermidine levels. Right. And so we always want to account for, molecularly speaking, 90% of variance in aging, or 90% of variance in mitochondrial health, or 90% of variance in environmental toxicity. These are some of the domains we monitor. And with aging, we notice that spermidine accounts for a very large proportion of the effects reported in the trials that our models are trained on. And so for us, that's excellent because it allows us to be very thrifty. Thrifty model development is how you avoid overfitting, but you still want to include the most important variables. Mm-hmm. Now, they all have to also be chemically sort of related, because the way we analyze our metabolites is contingent on a chromatography column. And that column has to essentially is only capable of analyzing a subset of the metabolome, and spermidine fit the bill. So it was analytically amenable to our current chromatography column. Statistically, it accounts for a very large portion of variance. And variance in what? I mean, spermidine has incredible evidence spanning all levels of scientific models, from cell studies to animal trials to human trials. Spermidine works and is important in aging. And this is from, you know, the best, most complete longitudinal studies published in the most high impact journals. And we included it in our models. We ran it with training data, and we saw that we could avoid overfitting. Instead of, you know, spermidine accounts for, you know, almost, I think, 22% of aging and 14% of other domains as well. But 22% of aging in our model is accounted for by spermidine. And so by putting it there, we don't have to now rely on three or four other metabolites to account for the same variance and then increase our chance of overfitting. And spermidine is just one metabolite that sits with a very large portion of variance attributed to it, and it works. I mean, when we do our own, you know, I recently published a article last year, I guess not so recently, in Geroscience, which is an excellent journal focused on aging and aging related disorders. And in Geroscience, you know, we showed that spermidine was an incredibly important biomarker in our trial, in our group of young and older individuals, as well as some other metabolites that are, you know, very interesting. I think cadaverine is another
What about spermine and putrescine? I noticed cadaverine in there as well, actually, which I was like, oh, like these are all these polyamines, right? And they dance together, like spermine and putrescine and spermidine kind of flip around with each other.
So putrescine is another excellent biomarker. It accounts for a large proportion of variance in multiple health domains that we have, as well as many of the disease signatures. It's related metabolite cadaverine, and both are named after dead bodies or decay, right? Putrescine is putrid, and cadaverine is named after cadavers. We were actually the first study to show cadaverine as a very important biomarker that is, again, with 90% accuracy, able to discern between 21-year-olds, 40-year-olds, and 65-year-olds, respectively.
Really?
And so what we saw was this linear increase in cadaverine. Cadaverine is a natural byproduct of bacterial consumption of organic matter. And if that sounds like we are measuring your internal rot.
A decomposition.
Then it's exactly what we're measuring. And that's what we postulated, was that we're measuring a systemic and gradually increasing rot factor. And this cadaverine molecule could be used with, again, very high accuracy to discern people of different ages when we bin them as 21-year-olds, 40-year-olds, or 65-year-olds. So a very sharp, significant association, strong and significant association between that molecule and age.
And so eventually, and I'm assuming you don't know this yet, but maybe you do, but eventually would the percentage of cadaverine or the level of cadaverine in a person, like one 65-year-old versus another 65-year-old, be indicative of something like, you know, we talk about biological rate of aging, which is this weird concept. It's you know, there's certain scientists you talk to and they start laughing and they're like, honestly, it's like a marketing tool.
Then
you've got, I know, and you've got people who are like hanging their hats on this whole biological aging concept. But this is the first time I've heard something that articulated to me in such a way that I'm sitting there going, well, I would think that if you take two people of the same age and one person has much higher levels of cadaverine than the other person, this might indicate that there's a problem in this, or this person's aging faster.
Absolutely. Natalie, you hit it right on the head. And thank you for saying that. I am just fed up with people saying, what's your biological age? Because it doesn't make sense. And yeah, we scientists laugh at that because you can't stop aging. Nothing that I know of can stop aging. Aging is cellular entropy. It is the aberration that comes with time. It is inherent in the physical laws governing our universe. You cannot escape aging. So to say that you have, let's say, Natalie, the metabolism of a 25-year-old, it's question begging, because I would necessarily then follow up with, what 25-year-old? There are healthy 25-year-olds, there are unhealthy 25. What 25-year-old? But we can look at markers that are very much tied to the rate of aging. And that is the best we can do. We cannot reverse the clock, but we can really slow it down. And so, that is, right. Yeah.
So do we know what to do about exceptionally high levels of cadaverine?
Yeah. There's nothing you can do about the generation of cadaverine. There's nothing you can do that, you know, let's take a supplement and quench the levels of cadaverine. Cadaverine is actually the byproduct of this metabolism. It's not the cause. The cause is that bacterial sort of digestion of yourself. And so there are things we can do to prevent the degradation or interaction with various microbiota that are known to produce cadaverine. And there are various steps we can take to reduce the expression of certain genes or SNPs that will increase your propensity to produce cadaverine. And that is what we simulate with our digital 20 experiments is what's the best way? What's high? What's low? And where do we see the aberration originating from? What's the ontology of that pathogenesis? And then we target.
So cool. So have you also been gathering data? So the test has been around, well, it's been available commercially since December 2022. Am I right? Or has it been around longer than that?
Yeah, we incorporated. So, okay. The test itself has been around for about 5 years. Okay. And we have not used it for N of one single sample profiling. We've used it in the course of our research. We've had this assay. We know the power of it. We know the sensitivity and the specificity, and the analytical performance is very high. So in December of 2022, we decided to incorporate the company. We then spent 3 months creating a bioinformatics pipeline that could take that data and produce an N of one study. Because with one person, frequentist statistics falls apart. You cannot perform statistics in the way that we traditionally would for our publications. And so we actually employ, you know, obviously AI, but AI is a method. It's not a branch of statistics. We use what's known as a Bayesian framework. So using Bayes' theorem of prior and post probabilities, we're able to provide insightful and meaningful and actionable data for an individual using just one string of their own data. And so we spent 3 months creating that bioinformatic pipeline and then another 3 months really sort of beta testing it in very small sizes. And I think it was in June of last year that we really came out of our beta phase and began offering this test commercially to all interested parties.
Well, I would think that with time, it would only get more powerful, right? Because as you, you know, because, you know, the beauty of it and the challenge of it is you're looking at N of ones. And so that is the beauty to me. Like, I don't really give a hoot about anybody else. I don't, you know, I mean, look, I had a preemie, right? 23 years ago. And the doctors kept coming to me and saying, you know, the statistics on this and the statistics on that. And if you do this, and if I'm like, you know what, I don't actually care. All I want to know is what's going to help this kid now. And I don't care what the odds are here, there, and everywhere. All I really care about is this one person, because you give me odds and I don't know where on the curve he's going to land. I just want to know where we are. So the N of one ultimately to the individual is all that should really matter. I mean, we can, you know, like we can start to narrow the field by looking at the odds, but by the time we get down to what should I do, it's all about me. And so this is where the power of what you're offering is. But I would imagine that, you know, you have 10,000 people in your cohort that you use to train your AI, but the test is only going to become more powerful as you do more and more.
Absolutely. So the test becomes more powerful along two dimensions. One is, as we include more individuals, we will start to discover new biomarkers of their reported conditions. For instance, we have a group of individuals in our testing database that report with hypothyroidism. If we match them to individuals with no evidence of disease, then we've started to create, we can do that regular frequentist statistics that we all know and love and produce significant biomarkers that are significantly different between the two. And our training data isn't so much used to say, here are the normal levels of what, you know, 2-methylglutarate should be. Our training data is used to model the proportional increase or decrease, the clinical significances, which would be alpha levels and beta levels, which are all these statistical considerations, essentially the effects. So if you know, alpha-ketoglutarate is involved in colorectal cancer, which it is, then we are not necessarily looking at what level was that alpha-ketoglutarate and you know, did it what level did it end at between the normal controls and the subjects with CRC. We're looking at the magnitude of change and the significance of change, and we're modeling that effect size. So we don't necessarily even have to have what is a normative range for alpha-ketoglutarate. Let's say in the literature, it was reported that alpha-ketoglutarate with 80% beta and 5% alpha will, you know, increase in CRC patients by a factor of 2.5 with a 95% confidence interval of 2.1 to 2.6. And then let's say you had a higher than normal alpha-ketoglutarate level and it was 2.1 to 2.6 times as high, that would then be classified as a potential CRC marker. And then we do that with all the other CRC markers and come up with a metabolomic match or a risk percentage that essentially tells our customers what proportion of overlap there exists between their metabolomic profile and the characterized metabolomic profile of colorectal cancer.
Right, which can directionally say, okay, maybe you're trending in the wrong direction, so here's what we know. But you've mentioned alpha-ketoglutarate, which everybody's running around pounding, saying it's a really important anti-aging molecule. So I'm confused.
Yeah, we don't use alpha-ketoglutarate as a molecule for aging. In fact, alpha-ketoglutarate is used in our mitochondrial assessment, as well as various cancer signatures. Alpha-ketoglutarate and its levels are involved in two well-known cancer processes. One is, of course, the Warburg effect, and the other is what's known as glutaminolysis, whereby glutamine is catabolized and then plugged into the TCA cycle via alpha-ketoglutarate. And it's another way, it's an anapleretic mechanism, whereby these amino acids are being used to further fuel the oxidative phosphorylation of the TCA cycle, because that is how this cancer cell is going to generate the energy it needs to undergo angiogenesis and, unfortunately, metastasis. And it's not enough for it to use, you know, pyruvate and acetyl-CoA and regular glycolysis. It needs even more. So it'll take, you know, aspartate and plug it in as acetic acid. It'll take glutamine and decompose that and catabolize that to alpha-ketoglutarate to basically fuel this TCA cycle with ever increasing levels of important substrates. And so we don't use alpha-KG as an aging molecule. I think there is, I've seen one or two studies about that. Various metabolites of the mitochondria are associated with aging, but that's because mitochondrial dysfunction is a hallmark of aging. And yeah. So the associations kind of get muddled there. We use it primarily for our assessment of mitochondrial health in the mitochondrial health domain, as well as, you know, the various cancer signatures that we corroborate using that metabolite.
Hey folks, can you believe that we're already like right into summer? Now, as the temperatures rise, we know it's important to take steps to stay energized and focused. And this is why I rely on Berkeley Life's nitric oxide formula to help me power through these dog days. Nitric oxide plays a crucial role in promoting healthy blood flow and oxygen delivery throughout your body. This ensures appropriate distribution of nutrition and hydration and also supports natural detoxification of your organs. When you're properly oxygenated, you will feel more vibrant, alert, and ready to take on whatever summer throws your way. So you want to win that battle against summer lethargy with Berkeley Life. Visit berkeleylife.com and use code NIDDBL to get 10% off your first order of nitric oxide formula, plus get free shipping. Check it out. Keep your energy and vitality flowing all season long with Berkeley Life. And now let's jump back into the episode. Okay, so mitochondria. We don't have time, obviously, to go to talk about all the domains, but mitochondria is one of those things that they're critical and they're impossible to measure. Right? Like there's like, you know, basically we look at someone and say, oh, you're lacking energy. Maybe you have mitochondrial, maybe your mitochondria aren't, but maybe you just don't sleep well. I mean, you know, it could be anything. So let's talk about the mitochondrial domain in your test, because just in the last month, I've had three clients and clinicians come to me and say, Nat, how do we measure mitochondrial function in humans? And I'm like, I don't think we do. But maybe we do.
We do now. Yeah. So measuring mitochondrial metabolites has never been out of reach for researchers and scientists like me or my co-founder. We measure mitochondrial metabolites very regularly. It's no big deal. Obviously, you need these advanced platforms to do so. It's not amenable to, you know, the ELISAs and the biofluorescent assays that are used in traditional diagnostic labs. These are molecular techniques, and molecular techniques are needed to look at features at the molecular level. And so with mitochondrial health, there are various assays you can implement. None of them are direct measures of mitochondrial output. We are measuring directly the things that the mitochondria make. So if you look at the TCA cycle, you'll notice that you have, eight products, and guess each one is a substrate to the next step. But you have eight products of the TCA cycle. And of those eight, we measure five of them. So citric acid, alpha-ketoglutarate, fumaric acid, malic acid, succinic acid. That's the five. And then in addition to that, we measure adenosine, which is a component of ATP, which gives us a sensitive, albeit oblique view of ATP levels themselves. And so we are looking at the process. We can map our customers' metabolomic levels to the TCA cycle and monitor the changes from step by step. We can literally trace the carbons and see where a metabolite is either too high, too low, what part of this cycle is undergoing a metabolic perturbation. And by identifying that, we can identify the enzyme likely to be responsible for that. And then again, target it with very specific interventions meant to either increase or decrease the rate or number of that enzyme, thereby putting the mitochondrial sort of assembly line back into its homeostatic range.
So cool.
It's not possible anywhere. I mean, this is one aspect of our test that I think is far and away one of the most beneficial and unfortunately one of the least available on the market. I wish there were other companies doing this, because we know that the mitochondria are important to everything, to cardiovascular health, to aging, to detoxification process is. And it's not just the powerhouse of the cell, far be it from mm-hmm. that. But we know it's implicated in so many important biological processes, and its importance is ubiquitous. But we have no way to monitor it. We have these very maybe like indirect measures of bioelectrical conductivity of muscle cells, which aren't the mitochondria. And there are some developing assays on the market that I think hold promise, but Therium's aerosol test still stands as the only way to directly assess the products of mitochondria, specifically the TCA cycle and electron transport chain.
Wow. That is slightly mind-blowing. All right. So I had no idea I was going to be talking about this today. So without going into massive detail, because I mean, I want to keep talking to you and we are going to keep going, I'm sure, for at least another 15 minutes, but I'd love to maybe just tell us what the other domains are so that people understand. So we have the mitochondrial domain. So these are basically the sum of the parts of the output that you're actually going to get. These are all the different pieces that you guys are looking at and assessing and then pulling together as to generate final recommendations and insights on the individual. And you mentioned there are 12 of them?
There's 12 of them. Some things are missing of the 12, which I think you'll look at and you'll say, well, where's immune health? Metabolites are notoriously, especially aqueous metabolites, they're notoriously poor reporters of immune function. And we will get to immune health once we build out our full ecosystem of systems biology testing. Once we get to the proteomics layer after the microbiome test is launched, we will offer a very high throughput, comprehensive LC-MS/MS-based proteomics panel. And in that panel, we will have immune proteins and have a very direct readout of immune health. We have tried to curate these 12 health domains that the aerosol test, our metabolomics test, reports on to be the constructs that metabolites underscoring each domain are uniquely positioned to speak to. So we talked about the aging index with, you know, cadaverine and spermidine. We talked about the mitochondrial index with the levels of the mitochondrial metabolites, right? And so we do that with 10 other domains. And those are things such as neurocognitive index, cardiovascular health, liver health, which is something that metabolites are excellent reporters of, far, far beyond AST, you know, the liver ALT. Function test, ALT, AST, that's alanine, that's aspartate. We measure both plus 57 other important metabolites of liver metabolism. And so the liver function tests cannot see us with a telescope. And we have, I guess the other ones are alluding, mutational load. So that's an enrichment analysis that corroborates your metabolic profile against 4,598 different SNPs that are validated in the Human Metabolome Database. So leveraging some external resources that are publicly available to scientists, we are able to say what proportion of these SNPs you have, which ones you have, what are they important, how are they affecting your health, and how you can mitigate or enhance their expression even.
Okay.
And we have, for instance, gut health. So we're not looking at, you know, the gut microbiota directly, although we're looking at very important metabolites that can tell us some things about what are the dominant taxa of your gut. Are there more pathogenic or beneficial? What's your pathogenic burden? What's the ratio of pathogenic to beneficial microbiota? We do that through analyzing various metabolites related to bacterial energy like histidine or gut-brain axis signaling like tryptophan. And we have other domains. I guess I'm reproductive health. Reproductive health is another one. If anybody wants to see the full list, they can go to our website, therio.me. But there are 12 key health domains, and underneath each one underlies a specific set of metabolites that, again, training on the scientific literature, we have validated to make sure that they speak accurately to that domain and are, in fact, generalizable to new test cases. And that's a very key concept that I think a lot of people don't understand. But, always ask if the models they're using are validated, if you're ever unsure. And that is the basis of our, you know, one part of our testing. Another aspect, of course, is our disease enrichment analysis, whereby we take an individual's metabolomic profile and we corroborate that against 480 disease signatures that have been validated, again, in human blood. And we provide a risk percentage score, which is essentially the percentage overlap of your metabolomic profile to the profile of autism or schizophrenia or breast cancer, Alzheimer's disease, various other conditions that are affected and included in that database.
Do you find you freak people out with that?
Oh my gosh. Yes.
You need mind specialist people. Like how do you deal with that? Because, you know, admittedly and understandably. Now, I mean, personally, you tell me I've got an overlap with autistic people. I don't actually care. I'm 60 years old. I'm way past that.
Well, if I tell you have a signature of preeclampsia, you know you don't have preeclampsia.
Well, no, but I know that I did, right?
Oh, so did you?
Okay. In there, done that, got the t-shirt. Right. Thanks for letting me know.
we've had that happen where we've tested one, especially I remember an individual during our early beta test phases where we were just trying out really the safety and efficacy of the test. And this individual tested very high for autism, was not autistic. However, their youngest daughter was severely autistic and nonverbal. And so the signature was present in the mother more so than any other signature we detected. So it runs the gamut. Obviously, as you can imagine, out of the 480 diseases that we profile, many of them are metabolic diseases, things like histidinemia, aminoacyl transferase deficiency. These are esoteric conditions that, in our experience, and as you've read in the case studies, have helped physicians, of course, use this as a shortlist for differential diagnosis when conditions are either overlapping or a patient is presenting with vague symptoms. And we operate on a complete transparent basis. We operate on full disclosure and also the ethos that if you are the possessor of a body, you should have the ability to query all aspects of that biology. And it should not be behind a physician allowing you to do so, although we have many excellent physicians on our practitioner program. And in fact, as you read in the case studies, our best outcomes have been when we have worked alongside physicians to provide this testing. However, incremental and cumulatively beneficial changes can be implemented direct to the consumer. And I was reading this FDA guidance that was issued yesterday about what information is should be available direct to consumer and what should only be given by a physician. And I was baffled by how absolutely arrogant and condescending the tone was, that this information is too complicated for you. This information might freak you out. This information is such and such and therefore not appropriate for you. You should have this with the consult. And at Therium, we absolutely rebuke any sort of, you know, ivory tower condescension that you shouldn't have access to your information. We are making these tools available to you so you can ask these questions. And we believe that, you know, and we don't engage in any data brokering. We don't, that philosophy that your data is yours permeates everything we do, from allowing you access to these very advanced research level analyses, research analyses that, although available in the most well-curated, well-funded hospital systems in America, the Mayo Clinic, Johns Hopkins, Duke, they all have extensive metabolomics core facilities whereby physicians will send their patient samples to a central facility for processing and analysis. They're using metabolomics already, but it's not prevalent in clinics. It's not prevalent in most hospital systems. There's various reasons related to the complexity and cost of these analyses. But we operate, again, under that assumption that if you are the possessor of a body and you would like this information, that we make those tools readily available to you. And although that, yes, it can scare someone to see an AIDS risk signature on their disease signature report, it can scare someone to see, you know, retinitis pigmentosa in their child's report, for instance. Those are discussions that are already behind a physician. If you have any one of these conditions, let's say you have, you know, you ping significantly enriched for colorectal cancer, we don't address that. We address your health domains. To then address, you know, colorectal cancer, it provides you with this, again, short list of conditions you could have, which you can provide to your physician, have a meaningful conversation about, and they can, guide you towards therapies or treatments that are targeted, and prescription medications that are targeted for that, if necessary.
Or screening, or
absolutely
more screening,
go have an endoscopic exam. Yeah, these are things that it doesn't preclude. It shouldn't preclude people having access to this information, because what they can do with that information is largely already safeguarded behind a prescription pad. And so I was reading this FDA guidance and I was just fuming. And
again, it triggered you.
Arrogance.
And you're still mad.
Absolute arrogance. And yes, yeah, we are all very, you know, accomplished, talented, intellectual people. But to say that this science is not for the people, or we should not democratize this science, I think is totally just inhumane in many ways.
Yeah, no, that's interesting for sure. Okay. You talk about, in the case studies, you talk about nutrition a lot. And I found that really interesting because the, you know, we've been talking about really kind of heady stuff, right? Like all this chemical compounds and mitochondria and this, that, and the other thing. And yet in the case studies that you present in your book, you talk about, and I think in all of them, like there's a nutrition intervention to all of them. And I wonder if one of the domains is nutritionally driven because, you know, I'm a trained nutritionist and we're indoctrinated in this food is your medicine. Like, let food be thy medicine. The, you know, one man's food is another man's poison. Like all of these things, which are so true. And so I just find it so amazing, finally, that here's a test that's super sophisticated. It's looking at weirdo stuff like, you know, cadaverine and God knows what else. But it's also looking at, you know, your nutrition status at such a micro level that can help to inform the person about, yeah, here's what you really need to be eating right now. Or here's how, like, talk about tailoring nutrition towards a better goal kind of thing. Because, you know, like there's the athlete, there's the cancer patient. And it's not like you were solving cancer here. This is someone who had cancer, went through the horrible treatments, was left, you know, barely surviving. And through the testing with the physician and a nutritionist was able to kind of go at restoring and replenishing and reviving herself so that she reclaimed her vitality.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I cannot believe when I was struggling to remember our health domains, I didn't remember nutrition.
I know. Yes, I was sitting there like, ah, yeah.
Nutritional index is a health domain. It's one of the most important health domains, obviously. And when we calculate an individual's overall score, which is a percentile of the number of versions of themselves that they're better than, the nutritional index is heavily weighted, obviously. And metabolomics as a science did initially break its teeth in the nutritional science space. And even my co-founder is a nutritionist as well, PhD, RD, and our chief consultant is Dr. Ortega Santos. She's also a PhD, RD. And so we love nutrition because, again, food is medicine. And we sort of overlook, I think maybe it's the fact that many of us eat multiple times a day. We've eaten our whole lives. We kind of do it monotonously. And at this point, it's kind of like driving a car where you don't really think about all the steps you do. But it is this incredibly intimate thing, isn't it, Natalie? Because we're taking something that's like external to our environment and we're consuming it and putting it on the inside. And then those things that are in the food become the constituent building blocks of our body. And in fact, it was Aristotle, the philosopher, who first theorized a cogent theory of nutrition and metabolism and committed it to writing. And that's why we've named our test after that philosopher, Aristotle. And so it is critically important, and we believe food is medicine. It's often overlooked. And we see, not just in our own case studies and not just in our own N-of-1 clinical trials that we publish, but also in the larger body of literature that has shown that therapies, whether they're supplemental or whether they're, you know, prescription therapies, always work better when there is nutritional guidance tailored to the desired outcome. And that is why when you check into the Mayo Clinic as a patient, you get a team of health professionals, one of which is a nutritionist. It is standard of care in the best, again, hospital systems and healthcare settings. And so what we measure are various metabolites related to nutritional status, various vitamins, fumaric acid is one of them. Ferulic acid is another one that is tied to many different micronutrients. And so by assessing its levels, we get a very keen insight into the nutrients on the peripheries of its biochemical circuit. And we have had, again, I'll give another example of a case study that didn't make it into the book, but it was a little too late after we'd written the book. And so this was a retired dentist who came to us. He was suffering from mild cognitive impairment. I mean, to the point where his physician thought maybe this individual had maybe early Alzheimer's. He was suffering from tremors at rest and chronic fatigue, irregular bouts of sweating, hyperhidrosis. And he didn't know what to do. So we collected, you know, our survey data from him. We got his dried blood spot test back. And then when we analyzed his profile, and in each domain, there are hundreds of discrete signatures. We put them into 12 domains, again, to digest this information and make it approachable and usable. We create this modular approach to understanding an individual's results. But in each domain, there are hundreds of signatures in there, right? So when we look at the mitochondrial domain, okay, or the cardiovascular domain, are we looking at thrombosis? Is there a signature of ion channel trafficking? Is there a signature of triglyceride deposits? Is there a signature of apoptosis, thrombosis? What is the signature that is affecting the cardiovascular health? So we looked at his environmental toxicity domain, and we saw heavy amounts of metabolites related to heavy metals, specifically mercury poisoning. Mm-hmm. Now, we looked at his survey profile. He's a retired dentist. And when he was practicing dentistry, dental amalgams were still being made of mercury and very limited PPE, right? Very limited. And so when we talked to him about, hey, we are detecting mercury exposure here, this is what we put him on. We put him on a treatment plan. This is another instance where the test was ordered by his physician, and the physician asked us to analyze this result and give a treatment plan. And by iterating, each intervention in our database 1,000 times using our digital twinning pipeline, we came up with, we want to give him dimer captococcinic acid, which is a chelation agent. We want to give him 10 milligrams per kilogram body weight. And so that was the direct medication that we wanted to give him. We wanted to sort of slowly taper him off slowly taper him up over the course of 2 weeks, and then also give him incremental periods of rest between the dosages.
Chelation is brutal. Yeah.
Brutal. And we just don't want to mess up his pH. And then once you mess up pH, you're messing up so many reactions that are contingent on pH, that are pH activated or deactivated. So we wanted to give him rest days. And again, all of this was the product of our simulations, the product of our in silico experiments on this individual's, on this gentleman's metabolic profile. So we gave him this chelation agent with on and off days and everything else. In addition to that, we recommended high sulfur containing foods, because of course sulforaphane will bind heavy metals and act as its own natural chelating agency. So that's where the nutrition comes in, right? We very, regular and specific amounts of broccoli and garlic were prescribed. In addition to that, we recommended this individual undergo 20 minutes of infrared sauna every other day. Now, actually, it really worked out because he had an infrared sauna. And we always shy away from giving recommendations that are too expensive or cumbersome or can't be practically implemented. This individual thankfully did. So he was very health conscious and had all the tools, the ice baths and the red light and the infrared sauna. And so we recommended infrared sauna 20 minutes every other day with an increased hydration, obviously, of 3 liters of H2O daily to, again, help with it. In addition to that, he had, regular strength training. He was an older gentleman, but very hale and hearty. And we recommended that he incorporate some aerobic exercises with a very specific range of, beats per minute to reach, again, to activate the cardiovascular system, activate sweating and detoxification mechanisms. And this was the synergistic approach we took. And nutrition played an incredibly important role in that. In fact, I would say so many of the things that we implement are medicine. That infrared sauna is medicine. The increased hydration is medicine. The aerobic activity to complement his strength training was medicine. It's not just the DPCA, the dimer captococcinic acid that we prescribed or we recommended his physician prescribe, which the physician did, and was actually very blown away by how detailed the administration protocol was given to him. But it's the food, right? Food is this, again, this incredibly intimate thing that we take for granted, but it's very important. So consuming those high amounts of sulfur-rich foods definitely played a role. And so when he retested with us after 3 months, which was the projected timeline we thought we needed, according to our literature, to reliably detect a chronic improvement in his metabolic profile, his liver and mitochondrial scores both doubled in score. Wow. Wow. And his mitochondrials and his mitochondrial health tripled. So we had doubling of his liver and environmental toxicity and tripling of his mitochondrial health.
And how did he feel?
He felt amazing. So before, this is the best
the
part.
Thing, right? Numbers are great, but how numbers did he feel?
Yes, numbers are great. And so we recommended 3 months at retest. Obviously, he improved, and the objective numbers showed that improvement. But the best part of my job is, science is magic. We can look, and it's real magic, right? We can look into an individual's physiology, tell them where they're at, and then use very advanced computational techniques to simulate where they could be. And when it works, it just feels so great. And of course it works because it's science. He emailed us 2 weeks after starting the protocol and absolutely was so thankful, described his symptoms as, mostly alleviated. He was very thankful to come to us. He had tremors at rest, which stopped. The mild cognitive improvement was improving. The mild cognitive impairment was improving daily, according to his son, who he said was his sort of barometer. And his son was a nutritionist, and the son actually ended up joining our practitioner program, which we have special. Yeah, so he's one of our members on our practitioner program, they, of course, completely agnostic to what his test results would be in 3 months. He ended up messaging us in 2 weeks and just really saying that I've had this vertical improvement in my sense of well-being, which ultimately is so much more important than numbers on a piece of paper. But it's the most rewarding part of the job. And it's really great when we see the science in action and we see its efficacy.
Wow. Okay. Well, listen, there's more, I just think this is so cool. And I want to start to wrap it up, but I also want people to know that, what's amazing about the direction you've gone in with this test is that there's application what's amazing is there's application for the people who are dealing with complex issues that it's just hard to get a handle on where to begin, right? And if let's say that mitochondrial domain is showing that there's struggle, even just optimizing that can kind of help other things fall into place before you've even addressed them, right? But at the same time, there's the application for the complex chronic or complex issues. There's the application for people who've been through, like the cancer patient who now is trying to rebuild her life after, thankfully the chemo killed the cancer, managed not to kill her. So now how do we rebuild her kind of thing? And that's an amazing story. But there's also the story of the athlete who wants to get that little extra performance edge. And so, by looking at the metabolomics, where can we optimize? Where can it be better? How do we give him that 1 or 2% tweak that's going to give him the edge that he needs to win the medal or perform better? So I just think that it's so exciting to see something that is so big and yet so honed in on the individual that it can be relevant to each person depending, no matter where they are in their journey. So
absolutely.
And this is super cool.
Thank you, Natalie. Yeah. And as you said, we see the gamut. We have individuals who I've had these symptoms for so long. I don't know what's wrong with me. And even if I can't identify with a discrete name, what's wrong with me, how do I get better? We have individuals who come to us and say, I've been taking 12 supplements a day. I spend $800 a month on supplements. I don't know what's working. We have individuals who are, peak performance athletes. We work with some of the best, what's it called? Oh gosh, what? CrossFit athletes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We work with some of the top CrossFit athletes to optimize their health. And so we have various ranges for each health domain. We have poor, we have normative, which most people will land in, and that's perfectly healthy. And we have optimized. Mm-hmm. So some individuals obviously will be optimized across some domains. And our goal is to then progressively bring them, if they're in poor ranges, to normative, and once in normative, to ideally optimize those levels for everyone, not just the super elite CrossFit athletes that go into these competitions.
The CrossFit athletes are great. They're just broken in other ways. I mean, I've done the CrossFit thing, and I can tell you, I'm pretty sure I put one of my chiropractor's kits through college by myself.
I'm sure. Yeah, absolutely. I
mean, and the problem is they suck you in with this amazing culture and community, so you can't leave.
Yeah. No, and you know, that's the thing that we see too, is that these CrossFit athletes, they've been doing it for so long and have no intentions of stopping. And our goal here is to optimize them and increase the longevity that they have within that sport. So, we really see, you know, the gamut of individuals. If I were to bin our customers though into those, you know, the three most relevant bins, it's how do I optimize what I already have going? I'm either a cyclist, CrossFit athlete, or something like that, or a marathon runner. How do I figure out what's wrong with me? Nobody's been able to put me onto a path to wellness. And also, you know, the supplement people who are, you know, trying everything, every method possible under the sun that they have access to and still don't have answers. You know?
Yeah. No, I love this. I think this is freaking amazing. So, all right, we've been going for a while. So why don't we agree that we're going to say goodbye for today. We're going to tell people where to find you, where to find the test, and then let us reconvene, whether it's in 6 months or a year, because I have a feeling there's going to be so much more to talk about as time goes on with you, as you learn more, as you develop more, and as just time goes on.
That's a great plan, Natalie. And if anybody wants to learn more about us, you can visit www.therio.me. So the domain will spell out Therium. Please sign up for receiving our handbook to the test, which is very long, as you know, and really gives the conceptual underpinnings of the science in a broader sense, and specifically the science of the Aristotle test. You can sign up to receive a sample report, see some case studies. Additionally, you can even book a time in my office hours. So sometimes people want to spend, I always leave an hour a day, which is a lot, I think, but I leave an hour a day open for interested parties to just book a time, a 30-minute slot to talk about their health needs, what we do at Therium, or just talk about science. And so having that access to, you know, the CSO, I think is really important in fostering trust and transparency, of course. And so you can schedule a time on our website as well with me if anybody wants to sit down. But otherwise, I don't think I'm that interesting. I hope I haven't bored you.
You're going to be a very busy guy. No, I'm not bored at all. And we also have a code for people. Guys, if you decide to jump in and you decide you want to have one of these tests for yourself, you can use code NAT. And that'll save you some money on the test. Although I have to say that for what it is and the amount of information and the quality of recommendations you're giving, it's actually shockingly affordable. And when I was going through the book, I was thinking, oh God, this is going to be this is going to be one of those thousands of dollar tests. And it's not. Like, you've done an amazing job at keeping it accessible. I mean, and not to everybody, obviously, but definitely, to people who want to prioritize these insights.
Absolutely. And we are engaged in a race to the bottom, as it were, right? And we believe that this is, again, just like if you have a body, you are entitled to query this data if you so choose. But we also believe that accessibility is related directly to cost. And we are very mindful of reducing the cost even further as time goes on, as we make our operations more lean and figure out some logistical efficiencies. But the test price that it started at, I don't even know our current prices, but I do know that. Okay. So I think I know our lowest is 200. So yeah, depending on what you get. Yeah. We started at 830 and now our lowest offering is $200. And that's happened in the last, you know, year of us really working with our supply chain. And so, and certain efficiencies in the lab that reduce our expense for our work and compensation for their labor. So we have really tried to make this test accessible, and we're going to continue that effort to, again, democratize this knowledge and bring these tools to everyone.
I love it. Well, and so just so you guys know, for the works, you're looking at around $750. There's a $650 offering and then the $200. I don't know what that is, but, you know, it's all on the website. So it's therio.me and it's Dr. Panis. So thank you so much for your time today. And thank you for the work that you're doing. Like, this is so exciting. And this is definitely, you know, keeping us on our toes and amazing insights into our health and future.
Thank you, Natalie. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure, and I hope we can reconnect soon.
Before we wrap up today's episode, I'd love to invite you to join my Biohacking Superhuman Performance community, aka the BSP community. This is a place where we dive deeper into longevity science, peptides, and bioregulators. If you're looking to get into the nitty-gritty on these larger topics, this is the place for you. Plus, we hold weekly Q&A sessions, either with myself or with special guests for live interviews for you to join, and you can ask questions to the community for everyone to answer along with myself. It's an amazing community. If you want to join, head over to natnidham.com/BSP-community to join or find the link in the show notes. Thank you so much for your continued support and for tuning into today's episode. I wish you all the best this week in your biohacking superhuman performance.